Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, it's us again. And Maggie has just come stomping into my kitchen saying that she wants to talk about hypocrisy and rage. Well, I'm in. Let's do it. Okay, what about hypocrisy and rage?
Well, I'm realising what a hypocrite I am.
Okay, we're all hypocrites.
We are all hypocrites, but I think the important thing is to understand it. And the one person that Jesus railed against was the hypocrite.
Okay.
Every single time. It was the one person who said, look at me, I'm doing the right thing.
Oh, virtue signalling.
Yes, exactly, virtue signalling. And what's brought this up for me is the space race, or whatever it's called, where Jeff Bezos, thank you for correcting me on the name earlier when I was saying, I don't even know this guy's name, the Amazon boss, or former Amazon boss maybe now, and Richard Branson have paid millions of dollars to develop a spacecraft that can take them into space outside the atmosphere, and they've both been up, maybe more people have been up by the time this goes out, and come back. And the outpouring of outrage and rage and fury and hatred against them on social media along the lines of how dare they spend this money on that when they could be feeding the poor.
Oh, well, I'm down with that. I don't hate them for it, I don't think, but yeah, I mean, I haven't followed this at all. I haven't seen the outpouring of rage or whatever, but yeah, I mean, Bezos single-handedly could kind of pay off every debt ever, whether it's national, international or personal, and reset the world and, yes, fund every ecological project that ever needed to take place to make the world a better place, and still probably have enough to go to space. And I just don't understand why he doesn't.
No, I don't understand it either. But my point is, and I hope we'll have a really good spirited discussion on this, because I think we're agreeing at the pivot point of it, but we're not going to come at it from the same direction, and I'm probably going to piss you off quite a bit on this. And that's fine, because I can learn when I talk about this stuff, because we're all entrenched in our own things. Well, let's start off with my hypocrisy, which is that I have to own up to the fact that I am rather still angry with my mother for moving into the 5-star retirement home and, you know, £65,000 a year to keep her sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
And part of me
is
a bit mad about that. So, I am mad about somebody else with wealth. So that it's my hypocrisy to say, I'm not mad at these guys. Why shouldn't they do what they want with their money? And there's a part of me that's also, but the biggest part of me, yes, the thing that disturbs me about this is that the one thing these men have got, which is what the poor need, is prosperity consciousness.
Yes, but.
No, please do, yes, but. Go on.
But how, I mean, I don't really know about Richard Branson, and obviously I only know what's available freely on social media, complete with its, you know, bird's eye view of not necessarily all the facts, but Bezos has made enormous amounts of money from having an absolutely genius idea,
yes.
Frankly.
Yes.
But also, from then, even though he's so minted, still continuing to, as far as I understand it, treat his workers really, really, really quite badly. So they're timed, they have to work at a ridiculous pace. As I understand it, they're all kind of, in inverted commas, self-employed, so they don't get any of their national insurance paid. They don't have any kind of, if they're not UK workers, they don't have any access to health and stuff. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This is all massive hearsay.
That's the trouble.
Yeah, that is the trouble.
Yeah.
But what's clearly not hearsay is he has the capacity to sort that out. He could do that in an afternoon. He could make a fair and equitable place for his people to work. And that is a foundation of an attitude that he clearly doesn't give a fuck about other people. And to me, the whole going into space, I mean, he probably imagines that he's taking the first steps that are going to mean that humanity can go and live on some other bloody planet somewhere else. What the fucking fuck, frankly?
Well, yeah, I agree with what the fucking fuck on that. Yeah, absolutely.
But with one hand, he's going, oh, we can explore the skies and maybe we'll find a place to live up in the skies. But he actually has it in his power, quite probably, to make enough of a difference to mean that we didn't need to do that because we'd stop fucking over the planet that we've got.
I take your point, but no, he doesn't.
Why not?
Because if he put all his money into feeding the poor right now...
No, I'm not suggesting he feeds the poor.
Oh, okay, fair enough. What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that he funds, instead of space race things... Things like, how do we clean up our ocean? How do we stop our emissions? How do we make a battery that doesn't use... Yeah.
How do you know he hasn't?
Well, that's what I'm saying, is don't know that he hasn't.
He and Richard Branson gave more money to charity last year than any other beings on the planet.
Did they?
Yes.
Okay, I did not know that.
No! I didn't know that. I found that out on social media, but I went down the rabbit hole and had a look.
Okay.
So, and somebody had put that and put a link to something which I followed, and a load of people on social media just laughed at it. So what? He didn't give enough. And my point actually is, it's not that I necessarily approve, but what the hell do I know, and what business is it of mine?
Yeah.
The only business I know about is what I do to help others.
Yeah.
And I don't do enough. So I am Jeff Bezos. Because I'm very wealthy compared with the majority of people, and I don't do enough. And the other thing is that I know that rage, hatred, passive aggression, spite, knock your own prosperity consciousness for six. You cannot prosper through hating somebody who does.
Yeah, I really hate you. Yeah.
That's my gripe. I'm seeing all these... people calling themselves spiritual or holistic, churning out hate and resentment and cutting themselves off.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to try and get across, which is, okay, I'm mad at my mother sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's my shit.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't she? She's got prosperity consciousness. She's got it so that her daughter said to her, enough, woman, you're going into this beautiful place. I chose the place.
Mm.
So I'm the hypocrite. She's got a prosperity consciousness, which I need to pick up more on. But actually, I don't need to pick up more on it, really, because I have the most wonderful life.
Mm.
I have enough.
Yeah. I so completely agree with you.
Yeah.
And want to just point your own words back to you that you pointed out to me, and I know it's so true, is that there's just because... Well, I mean, with money, I don't know, we're in the imaginary money world now, aren't we?
But, so yeah, money is imaginary. Money.
Yeah, it is imaginary.
Yeah.
And so just because he's got a shit ton of it doesn't mean that you or I or anyone else can't have enough. But then I do keep going back round to the way that he and, you know, people like him, she says, making a very dreadful generalisation in a way. Seemed, you know, it's fine that he's got loads of money. I'm profoundly glad he's given loads to charity. But what about the way he treats his employees? You know, if we come back to the way you do something is the way you
do everything.
There is a basic lack of respect there, which I, at the very least, can't respect him. I kind of, you know, grudgingly admire the fact that he had such a good idea and made it, you know, really work for himself. But, you know, hello, what about a bit of respect for the people who make that happen? What about a bit of fairness and equity?
Yes and.
Yeah.
Yes and. This is not new. This is no different from pharaohs building the pyramids. This is no different from slave labor building the temples.
No.
It's always happened. No, I'm not saying it makes it right at all. And there's a phrase that Jesus said that hacks a lot of people off, which is the poor are always with us.
Mm.
Now, Jeff Bezos could not treat the people badly if the people didn't put up with it and didn't have the consciousness that expected it. Now, this is me sounding really elitist, and I'm not meaning to sound elitist, but I taught prosperity consciousness for years because it was the thing I needed to learn.
Mm.
I don't teach it anymore because I kind of got it. But I still come back to this again and again and again. Even if there was a beautiful, bright sign saying, come in here, I'm going to give you £10,000 a month for the rest of your life. The people without a prosperity consciousness would not see that sign. So what I want to try and do, and what I've tried to do forever, is to say to people, lift your consciousness so you don't have to work for this in this way. How do you get yourself out of this? And I've probably told this story before, so forgive me if I have, but it's still relevant. And it sounds like I'm saying when we came back from Montana and I was seriously broke, I'd lost all my money, I'd been an absolute git. I'd been a prat and a fool and an idiot. And I'd lost everything. And I'm working in a pub to make enough rent for a dismal little basement in London. Not very happy. And then I managed to, through the love of a friend, get a job working for him, which I absolutely hated as a PA in Piccadilly, 45 minutes on the Northern Line. It was, to me, the absolute idea of hell. But every lunchtime I went and sat in Fortnum and Mason. And what I could have done was stayed in the office or walked around the parks and gone, I hate this work, I hate this company, I don't approve of what this company's doing, it isn't paying me as much as it should be paying, and I don't like the way they're doing it, and it's all wrong, and it's all this. And there was a certain amount of me that was doing that, but every lunchtime I went to where the wealthy were. And within 6 weeks, somebody who didn't even know I was doing that sent me a Fortnum and Mason pamper for my birthday.
Wow.
And within 3 months, I got that company to fund me to £2.5 million to start a dot-com company for women's holistic health.
Wow.
Now, I wasn't high enough, I hadn't got prosperity consciousness high enough to make that last because the dot-com crash happened. But because of my friendship with the boss there, because I would talk to him about these things and he would listen, and he was a good man, he funded us £10,000 a month for the following year. So we had time to build something and get better jobs. And I met the love of my life and married him. And I just think that everybody can do that. If I can do that, everybody can do that, which is not about going on about, I don't have, it's awful, it's terrible, it's wicked, it's vile, it's this. But where do I need to change that I can live a better life? Because I can't make Jeff Bezos change.
No.
Does that sound reasonable?
No, it does. It sounds entirely reasonable. And I probably don't agree with everything you said, possibly, or not. It's not that I don't agree with you. I have some reservations.
Fine, and I respect that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But I really hear you on my life. I am responsible for my life.
Yeah.
And my life will be what I make it in partnership with the divine, by which I mean in partnership with other people's lives, with what we call circumstances, and with the hand that I've been given by way of inheritance. And that I think the very thin ice that expressions like prosperity consciousness treads on is the idea that we are solely self-responsible for how our life turns out. But that's not fair.
No, because we're part of a weave, aren't we?
We are, yes. But also the thing that we're really not responsible for but are subject to is not just the weave, it's the hand that our inheritance has given us. So, for example, if your ancestors, just as a really brutal and recent example, if your ancestors were in Auschwitz, you will have markers for trauma inside of your body that will make you very, very, very much more likely to perceive the world as being stressful, threatening, reasons to be anxious, etc., etc., etc. Which just, I'm going to suppose, because I don't know anyone with those ancestors, that might then well make you, therefore, perceive all of life as kind of potentially threatening. So maybe you don't ever take risks, maybe you don't trust, maybe you can't take that ridiculously amazing and incredibly unlikely job that you've been offered that would give you prosperity because of this incredibly strong trigger, this trauma marker that you have in your makeup. Now, okay, yes, it's our responsibility to heal ourselves and our lineages in whatever way we can. But also, you can't look at that person and go, what I hear covertly in what you're saying is kind of, well, if you're not rich, you're to blame. And I think that's really unfair.
That's incredibly unfair, and it's not what I'm trying to say at all.
Okay.
But I hear that is one of the things that will come up, and that's one thing thrown against the prosperity churches in America, and with some justification, which is if you don't worship God the right way, you won't prosper.
Yeah.
But it is a weave, but you can't start the journey to any form of consciousness through hate.
No, of course not.
And yes, Gabor Mate, whom I've spoken about before, the Canadian doctor, his mother, he was born in the early 1940s, and his father was in a camp. He's Jewish, and his mother was terrified, and he was traumatized by it and became an addict in later life. But he bless him, has been able to turn that around and works with drug addicts. And he says that nearly all addicts are responding to trauma.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, there's no point in having a war on drugs. That's utterly, utterly stupid. What we need to do is have a healing of trauma. And absolutely, I totally agree with that. So if Mr. Bezos and Mr. Branson would like to fund trauma recovery programs, that would be lovely. But they've got their own trauma, probably.
Yeah.
It may be their trauma that makes it so important for them to say, look at me, I'm in space. Now, they're not healing their trauma, but they might work. Just as well have trauma.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it's anything equal to people in Auschwitz or anything like that, but we've got so much in the weave. We've got karma. My dear friend Adam, who we've talked about previously, is going in, probably will have had heart surgery by the time this is broadcast. If you remember, he came and stayed with us last year.
Mm.
And I don't mean to sound arrogant. He made sufficient recovery for him not to need the operation this time last year, but this year, he has got... is having the operation, and he's totally convinced that it's the right thing and it's his karma. And there's a part of me that's sort of jiggling away in the background going, I'm quite sure that if you manage to heal sufficiently in 5 weeks in Devon, there are other routes that you could take here. But that's his choice. He's going with the operation, and I'm respecting that choice, and that's fine, and that's the way he's going.
Mm.
But it is still a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not the one that I would have taken.
No, and there's got to be room for... there's a chance that it's the right choice.
Indeed, it may well absolutely be right that he's meant to go through this karmically, he has to go through that, and that's his totally what he sees and what is true for him, and that's absolutely fine. But it's his life path, and Jeff Bezos can't change that.
No.
There's so much that we can do, and we can't do it by saying, I'm helpless.
Which is, who's saying I'm helpless? The people who are hating.
Yes. They're basically saying, you should sort my life out for me. And we see this with the government as well. I'm not explaining it very well.
Massive projection.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. But that's what I see with people saying, maybe it's part of my hypocrisy. Nobody helped me, so I'm sort of looking at people. Well, why are you expecting them to?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen any of this hate, but I would...
Well, it wouldn't disturb me if I didn't have some, would it?
The hatred would not disturb me if I didn't have some. That is also very true. But yeah, my imagining is that I don't know, I can't get inside the heads of people who would choose to hate Bezos. I mean, do I feel anger? Yes, I suppose I do. I feel anger towards his actions.
Mm.
But I certainly don't hate him.
Mm.
And I would hope and imagine that much of what's being expressed on Facebook is that. And that I think we rarely, really hate someone we don't know. I mean, hate seems far too personal to me to be manifested against that which we don't know. But
you use the right word, projection.
Yeah.
It's all projection. And perhaps I need to learn to be more angry about it. It may maybe I'm blocked off in that area. So maybe that's another part of my hypocrisy, that other people's anger disturbs me because I have anger and I don't express it.
Possibly.
I don't know. I mean,
that's being angry with your mum and you've expressed that. So.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I don't think this helps. That's all. I don't think it helps. I don't know whether it's right for them to go into space. I don't know whether other great discoveries will be made because of the work that was done to get them into space. I don't know if it was good to employ all these people to build these spaceships and whether they got paid well or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that's the honest answer. Is it a good thing? I don't know. But I do know that seeing people spewing hate is not good.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah. I've got no argument with you there.
Yeah. But it is also true that if you don't own what anger you do have and you hide that inside, that's going to create a trauma response world, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
I mean, the levels of trauma response that are expressed in the news, you know, it seems like we're all totally traumatised.
I think we are totally traumatised. Yeah. Totally. I think humanity, full stop, is traumatised.
Yeah.
Especially the West.
Yeah.
You know, we have such a degree of separation. If you just look at us as part of the world soul, then of course we're in trauma because we're in separation.
Yeah.
And there are so many reasons why we would, even on a national or global scale, be traumatised.
Mm.
And I remember hearing the amazing South African shaman, Colin Campbell, speak on this and just saying that, you know, the human animal might be a migratory creature, but they're also a local creature. So even if you're migrating the length and the breadth of the world, your experience as a human animal before our global culture would always be local. You might have moved from where you were, but you'd still be where you are, if you see what I mean. And that's, yes, don't do that. That's, so when we had pictures of ourselves from space, that was, in his estimation, potentially an incredibly traumatizing moment for much of humanity, because we suddenly saw ourselves as other.
Yes.
We were looking from a perspective that's not here.
Yes.
And that's...
That's interesting. I've never heard it that way around before.
Yeah.
I've only heard people say how wonderful it was to be able to see the planet from space.
Yeah.
But actually, no, that's a very, very valid point. And that's what leads us, I think, into this fear, which it's always the fear of the other. Is the other doing better than me? Is the other going to oppress me? Is the other going to take my land? Is the other going to steal my oil? So the problem always is from the other that we think of, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. It's a weird one, isn't it? Yeah, because even the most generous and lovely amongst us, if you put them I had a weird conversation with somebody the other day about a kind of post-apocalyptic world where I think they just watched Mad Max, some movie or other that didn't have, oh God, I'm so hopeless at this, it didn't have, what's his name, that was in the first one.
Mel Gibson. It was one of the other ones.
And I didn't realise that they ever even made a Mad Max that didn't have Mel Gibson in. Anyway, they were telling me it was great, but we got onto the apocalypse and how were it to happen, that both of our kind of feeling was, well, there's no point in being a prepper. There's no point in preparing for the apocalypse, because unless you are the kind of person who's definitely gonna do harm to those who try and take from you what you have, if you're not that person, then there isn't any point in having anything, because you can bet somebody will be right along to take it away from you.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I was kind of shocked at our sort of supposition that we both arrived at, that's what the world's full of, people who will just come and take it from you, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not sure that it's true, but I know there are some of those people.
Yes, and that's what we're all afraid of.
Yeah.
The person who will come and take it away from us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love the idea that I sit and talk with Adam a lot about how we would get a little manor house and how we would grow and how we would do this. But in the end, it does come back to how would we defend ourselves from the others that would take it from us. So where did we get to this incredible world of lack?
I know, exactly. Why is our thinking not with my manor house and my fields of food when other people come? How am I going to extend what I'm doing so much that I can welcome them in?
Yes.
Rather than going, ooh, you're trying to take what I've got. How am I going to defend myself from you? I mean, that's such a, it seems to be, maybe only in your little world and my little world, but it seems to be such an entrenched thing.
Yes.
Is that if I have thing in the world beyond this world, which means it's happening in this world now as well.
Yeah.
If I have thing, then if you come along and see thing, you're going to want to take it from me.
Yeah.
Rather than, if I have thing, how can I either harvest thing or enlarge or enhance this thing so that I can give you enough for you as well?
Mm-hmm.
Which is surely the place we'd all rather be living in.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's and again, that kind of mindset must come down in the end to fundamental trauma.
Yes.
Which leads me through history back to the place of what the hell, how did it happen? Who are these, typically it is strangers who come from the north, who did the first harm? Who did the first harm that put us from the beginning, or from a beginning, from the beginning of trauma, into trauma? What happened?
Mm.
Because I'm not sure that it is our basic nature. I think it's our conditioning.
Mm.
That's not what I see in children.
No. No, no, I agree with you. Where did the first rupture start? Well, and we discussed this before, the biblical story of the first rupture is disobedience of what God told us to do, but I've always disagreed with that, and I've said it before, which is the first rupture was the blame.
Mm.
The not taking responsibility. Yep, you told me not to do that, I did it, sorry. Well, instead of, she gave me the fruit, wasn't my fault. Oh, the serpent tempted me, it wasn't my fault, it wasn't my responsibility. So it is chicken and egg. Everything is chicken and egg. How do we start from here, understanding that we are traumatized?
Yeah.
Well, we look at our need to blame to start with, I think.
Mm.
You know, there is trauma. End of. What do we do now?
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, again, bless Gabor Maté, that's his big question. And that seems to be now a big question within the whole of the psychotherapeutic community. Yes, we are starting to understand, you know, the basic first statement of shamanic healing is that in order for there to be a requirement, if you like, for shamanic healing, trauma must have taken place in order that we suffer from soul loss, which is the source within the shamanic perspective of all illness, whether that's mental, physical, societal, spiritual, whatever.
Yes.
And that now modern psychology is coming round to the exact same understanding that it all begins with trauma.
Yes.
And so, okay, we found out where it all begins. Now, how are we going to heal it? Because in the healing, we can change our world, our viewpoint, our understanding, all the rest of it.
Well, why don't we both just say what, because somebody may be listening now saying, oh my God, have I lost some of my soul? How do I get it back? I can't go and see Susie. What do I do? Is there anything that can be done?
Absolutely. The knowing of even the first inkling, if you're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, maybe I'm suffering from soul loss, is to know that you are powerful and that is your soul. Call it home.
That's what I mean by prosperity consciousness. Call your soul home. Thank you. That's what I mean by it. Go, please keep talking. Sorry, I interrupted you.
All right. That's a complete swear ball for me, but basically, it's as simple as that. And if you are able to remember specific times when you feel like, my goodness, I might have been so traumatised that I jumped out of my skin, or I got beside myself with rage or with grief or whatever. Do I remember those times? And if I do, then, you know, the clue's in the word. Remember, put yourself back together and call yourself home. And so go back to that time. From your standpoint of I am in my body now, in my memory, see myself. There I am. Oh, good heavens, I was in a car crash. I had that real moment. Mm. Go to the car crash. Look for yourself. Oh, there you are. You're standing beside the tree. The act of stepping out is not stupid. It sounds it in the context of our culture. It sounds like a daft thing to do, to step away from yourself.
Mm.
But actually, it's... In cultures where wisdom is passed from mouth to ear, everyone knows, bad thing happened. A bit of me stepped out. That bit has, in this example, been standing on the tree, going, oh, isn't this tree beautiful? Wow, look at the shape of the leaves. How nice, la, la, la. So when we remember to call ourselves home, what comes back is a piece that's been beautifully standing under a tree or wherever, outside of time, not suffering, having a glorious moment. And so when we call it home, it's able to go, hello, amazing, well done, would you like a cup of tea? It's able to come home as caretaker and
untraumatized. Yes,
exactly. And so we can go to, okay, here's the site of my accident, here's the site of the dreadful thing that happened, here's the in my ancestry, here's the thing I know is the thing. We can go back, and whether it's for our personal soul or for part of our ancestral soul, and say, hello, my darling one. I see you. I'm here for you. Come back to me. Come home. I am the adult who can tend you, who is in a way the child in any circumstance, even if it happened last week and you're 93. That bit of you that stepped out. Come back to me. Come home. Yeah. I need you. But also understanding that that bit now is able to be the one that goes, excellent, now I'm back, I'm here, I'm whole, I know what to do.
Exactly.
I know how to take care of you. I know how to step forward.
Yes.
And that there is a tremendous unacknowledged power in calling to mind, in using our imagination as a tool. We don't have to be some great shaman or witch doctor or any of those things.
Yeah.
We have to understand the power of our imagination to shape our own reality.
Yeah.
And that in partnership with the spirits, who provide us in many ways with that imagination, whether it's a conscious partnership or not, as soon as you set out and go, okay, thing happened. I believe some of me stepped out. So I'm implicitly saying I believe I have a soul.
Yeah.
Therefore, spirits, whether I know you to name you back to what we were saying or not, spirits of all that is good and strong and well in me, in my lineage, in my ancestry, in my world, wherever you believe the spirits to be, help me. Bring this bit of me back to me. And if I can imagine it, the more vividly the better. Imagine me welcoming me into my own embrace and holding me tight and kind of melting back into me. The more deliberate imagination, the more we can use our imagination as a tool, the more power we give that. Mm-hmm. And the partnership with spirit aspect doesn't mean, you know, I need to have taken 20 years and trained with a shaman and blah, blah, blah. It's just you acknowledging that the spirits are there, that you have spirit, that you have soul, and that our imagination is a powerful tool to shape our reality. And we can and do call ourselves home with that knowing.
Mm.
And that's really powerful. And then the single most important thing there is to know beyond that is that if you've done that potently in partnership with spirit, that there needs to be an acknowledgement of that partnership. And so there has to be the thank you part, the bit where I say, thank you, thank you, thank you, spirits. You've brought me home to me in partnership with me. I've come home to me. Now what do I need to do to say thank you? And that's going to fix it in this reality.
I can't improve on that. That's beautiful. I'm going to just throw one little thing in to think about at the end. Do you think that people are so angry about these boys with their toys going into space because the part of the soul that they hid was the child in them that wanted to play?
Wow. My haven't thought about it too deeply answer to that is surely yes.